Hi, I'm Drew Mandel. 2020 has been a bad enough year. The only thing that could make it worse is a tragic accident involving a sharp blade and your sensitive area. Precautions are necessary to keep your nether regions safe, and our friends at Manscaped have an entire line of products to keep your sensitive areas tragedy-free. Take it from us at Illegal Curve. One circumcision is enough for a lifetime. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off and free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, 20% off, free shipping with promo code ILLCURVE. That's manscaped.com, proud sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Yeah, well, again, you know, Pierre LeBrun actually lobbed this one out on Thursday as part of insider trading, and he wasn't meant to be explosive. You know, shovel day off. He's in a good and in a bad situation there. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't a disgruntled player or a team unhappy with a star player. This is just embracing reality here.
From Monday on TSN 1050 in Toronto, that's TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger saying Patrick Laine isn't a disgruntled player, which probably came as a lot of surprise to people here in Winnipeg after Thursday's, call it a trade demand or not, that Pierre LeBrun reported. A little bit of insider-on-insider violence, if you will. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of Winnipeg Jets news for you. We have 3 hours of NHL discussion for you. It's all happening this Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, and we welcome you to the program. Gentlemen, it is good to see you on this Saturday morning, a gray Saturday morning here in Peg City, but of course, lots to talk about, particularly starting, of course, with Patrick Laine. How are you, gents?
What's up, boys? Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit more quiet this week, but you know, these rumors just don't seem to go away, and I think that was 5 days ago when Dregs was on first up with Landsberg and Carlo Koliakovo. But, you know, at this point, I'm almost leaning towards, you know, unless there's new information, I'm kind of leaning towards this is almost a coin flip, or, you know, I'm leaning toward that, you know, this trade isn't going to happen because, you know, that was a pretty big double down there from Darren Dreger. And I'm not saying that Pierre LeBrun's reporting isn't good. He's an excellent reporter. But if you're talking about a player like Laine not being disgruntled and the Jets aren't unhappy with Laine, then it goes back to what we talked about, you know, over a month ago, guys. The only reason you're even entertaining the thought of trading Patrick Laine is if you don't think you can sign him long term. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't appear to be the case. So I don't really, what I'm saying is I don't really know what to make about this anymore.
Well, you have one insider on Thursday coming out with the LeBrun bomb, which is what it was, the bomb, if you will, which is what it was when, you know, he gave his report on insider trading that a trade was more or less inevitable. I'm paraphrasing now. The trade was more or less inevitable. It's bound to happen. You know, both sides acknowledge that it's going to lead to a trade. And then you have Dreger here 4 days later saying, you know, this, that LeBrun's report wasn't meant to be explosive. Well, I mean, I don't understand. How can you have both things be true? Because clearly they both can't be true in this instance right now.
Guys, I mentioned to you, I mentioned to both of you off air. Let's say that this is Toronto and not Winnipeg. And I realize there's a big difference, but I don't think there really is a big difference because you're talking about a Canadian market.
Yeah.
If you inserted Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews into this situation, Toronto Maple Leafs fans would be going absolutely berserkers. They really would. So, I mean, even though, you know, LeBrun is just reporting what the agents Andy Scott and Michael Liut said, obviously Jets fans are going to perk up and they're going to get a little bit nervous when, you know, the agents are saying that it looks like a trade is inevitable, right? So, I mean, there's part of this story that we definitely don't know about because 1 second, you know, it looks like a trade is inevitable, and then another second it looks like, well, you know, maybe the Jets could trade Laine if, you know, the right player is coming back the other way. Well, yeah, obviously if Jack Eichel or, you know, Seth Jones is coming back the other way, then, you know, maybe that's a trade that Chevy considers, but there's probably only, you know, half a dozen to a dozen players that you could do a one-for-one trade for, right?
And the odds of those kinds of trades happening are so slim,
right,
that it's not really realistic. I mean, there is no... there's no market right now for a Seth Jones for Patrick Laine trade. Columbus isn't making that trade. Eichel for Laine. Buffalo isn't making that trade.
Right.
So you don't have these two. You don't have two disgruntled superstars or two mm-hmm. superstars in the league that would be a natural right. fit for a one for one trade right now. I mean, it seems to me from my perspective here, on Thursday you have LeBrun doing advocacy work on behalf of Laine's agents. Mm-hmm. And then with this report on Monday, you have Dreger doing advocacy work on behalf of Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets organization, Dave.
It defies logic. I mean, absolutely. I saw that there was an interview, so I figured I'd listen to it, and I listened to it. And look, you sometimes say things on radio, and, especially when you're filling time, you can say something and you might end up looking back and saying, oh, maybe that wasn't exactly the manner in which I meant to say it. But I listened to what Darren Dreger said. It wasn't meant to be explosive. Well, as everyone knows, we catalog every morning the morning papers. Once the Jets acquired Paul Stastny, there was nothing about Patrick Laine. I mean, obviously, I shouldn't say there's nothing, but you know what I mean. The talk had died down from every article being about what can the Jets get for Patrick Laine, where can the Jets send Patrick Laine to, a lot less. So that right there defies, if you have a brain and you listen to the what's going on, it's hard to justify saying it wasn't meant to be explosive. And then Dreger said, I think we can all understand why the agents would want to have communication with the Winnipeg Jets amid all the speculation over the past number of weeks with Laine's name in the crosshairs. Nobody would take issue with that. What people take issue with, what I took issue with, is that the agents don't need to do that with Pierre LeBrun, because I suspect they have Kevin Cheveldayoff's phone number. And if they needed to get a hold of Kevin Cheveldayoff, they call him directly. If you want to get the entire world talking after the world has gone silent, then you do what you did. So, to suggest that the agents weren't doing anything other than, wanting to have some sort of communication with the Jets through Pierre LeBrun, again, defies logic. And then you introduce the idea that now somehow it's about money. I'm just saying, but I'm saying you introduce another idea, which has never been suggested before, mm-hmm. which is the idea that could the Jets pay it? So to me, again, you hear this and you think to yourself, how can you say that? How can LeBrun say it on Thursday and Dreger say that on Monday? And we're supposed to hear those two things, and we're not supposed to be like, what is going on here? Because it doesn't make – it just, again
– you're saying basically you have two contradictory comments or two comments that are
– they don't match up.
Opposed to
That's
one
right.
another.
It just defies – again.
Yeah, there's no consistency in what's being reported.
What I'm saying is it defies logic.
Yeah. And, going back to the contract, right, because, we always like to throw out these numbers. Well, and to me, like – you're talking about a player that you would want to sign to at least, 6 or 7 years, right?
We're going to play the audio that Dreger said about the contract coming into the next segment.
Sure.
But let me just read it out loud here so that you can
sure.
people can, hear the comments. This is Darren Dreger on Monday on TSN 1050. But Cheveldayoff is in a good and bad situation there. This isn't a disgruntled player or a team unhappy with a star player. Well, I mean, then you obviously trade a guy who's, who's not disgruntled. That happens all the time, a superstar like that. This is just embracing reality here. Is Winnipeg going to feel comfortable paying Patrick Laine $8.5 or $9 million on the wing after next season? That's probably going to be what he's going to command. That's probably what he's going to get, and they have other needs. Well, if the hardest thing to do in hockey is score a goal. And the number of people who score goals at the pace and at the proficiency of Patrick Laine are few and far between. So if you want to be in the NHL and you want to be a National Hockey League organization, you pay a player who can score 40 goals. You pay a player who can score 45 goals, who has the talent to do so and the skill set to do so. So this idea that the Jets might not be comfortable paying Patrick Laine $8.5 or $9 million a season is to me just the most bizarre. Why? Who are you going to pay that to if not a guy who can score at a prolific rate?
Right, and I agree with you 100%, and I think most people will. And I think our listeners went a little bit crazy yesterday. Pardon me, last week when we were talking about Laine being a generational player, and I agree that Laine isn't a generational player in the same sense as maybe a Connor McDavid or a Sidney Crosby. But let's be honest, those are future Hall of Famers, two of the best players in the entire game. I think the point we were trying to make was that he has generational talent. And specifically, as Drew just mentioned, it's generational goal-scoring talent. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we all agree that there's a good chance that Laine is going to score 50 goals, maybe even, you know, 55-plus goals in the NHL if, you know, his shooting percentage is where he would like it to be, right? Mm-hmm. And he gets those power play goals. But, you know, back to the contract, because that's what we always said. I mean, we went mentioned that earlier this segment, right? Guys, like, we were saying that the only reason that you even entertain the thought of trading Laine is because you don't think you can sign him long-term. Now, I get it, because if you're talking about eight, let's just use, you know, the max contract, which I think the Jets would like to sign him to a max contract. If you're talking about
in terms of years, you're saying.
Right. And yeah. If you're talking about $9 million a year, even I can do that math, that's $72 million. If you're talking about, you know, let's say $7.5 million, and I did have to use the calculator for that one, Drew. Then
your dad's a math professor.
Then, yeah, right. But you're talking about $60
million. Yeah.
So you could be talking about a difference here over an eight-year contract of around $12 million. That's a lot of money. So even if you're talking about like 8x8, you're still talking about the, you know, $6 million. This isn't, you know, this isn't just a couple of quarters here. You're talking about, you know, a $70 million contract possibly, right? So, I mean, sure, the Jets are probably more comfortable around $7.5 to $8 million, whereas Laine's agents, you know, are probably, you know, going to be pushing for $9, maybe even $9.5 million, right? So that's a lot of money. So I get that, but I agree with you in the sense that it all comes down to this for me. And this is just my own opinion, and, you know, people might disagree with this. Even though Laine has his setbacks, and he definitely does have his setbacks, he's not the best defensive player, but I will say this, he did improve leaps and bounds in his overall game. You know, skating, the way he plays on the defensive side of the game, he definitely has room to improve for sure. But you're never going to acquire that type of talent, I don't think, if you're the Jets. Like, you just don't get those types of players.
You fall ass backwards by winning the draft lottery into a guy of his talent, and then you're going to trade him because he's so talented that he's going to command a lot of money?
It just seems to be changing, but the problem is it's moving the goalpost, right? So, like we talked about, you go from the Jets acquired the center that, you know, we think is going to, you know, be playing with Patrick Laine and has worked well with him in the past and could, you know, get everything settled here in Winnipeg, to, oh, suddenly now, you know, the agents introduce this bomb and suddenly, you know, everything's moving forward again and everybody's talking about Patrick Laine, and the, like I said, the chatter increases, to, well, let's calm the chatter down. And again, to say that, you know, look, there's people on Twitter who saw Patrick Laine wearing a Jets uniform while training in Finland, and they were like, oh, okay, so he doesn't hate the organization. Things are still rosy. But, like, so people are looking for, you know, any sort of, like, light in the darkness with respect to this issue. And I just think, like, the problem is that, you know, when you hear these things, again, I keep coming back to this, but it defies logic to follow what one said and then the other said.
And, Dave, you wonder, you know, how much of this is the agents publicly putting pressure on Chevy to make him, I don't know, seem more valuable and get him more money in this contract? Because that's the only thing I can think of why you would do that. Because I don't think Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to be intimidated into moving Laine.
His track record of not moving players who've requested for trades is well documented.
And again,
at least for, you know, somebody comes to him with a trade demand, he doesn't immediately spring into action. He makes a trade when it's appropriate for his team, or he doesn't make a trade, you know, for a number of years. We saw that with Trouba. We saw that with Kane, where he, you know, certainly played the long game when it came to trading either of those players.
Right, and both of those trades, I would argue, worked out in the Jets' favor, right? Like, Neil Pionk, when he came over in that Trouba trade, it was kind of like, well, you know, how good is Pionk going to be? Well, he was a really nice surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jets fans, you know, saw how valuable of a defenseman he is. And then, obviously, you get the first-round pick with Hanola, and, you know, we don't have to get into the Vander Kane trade. That's been well documented how the Jets won that trade. So, again, we're not saying that, you know, there is a Laine trade happening here. I'm leaning towards Laine's not being traded. And now I don't know what to believe, and I don't know if I should even consider any of this, because you have Pierre LeBrun and Darren Dreger basically giving different accounts of reality.
Yeah, conflicting reports. Nobody's quite sure. You know, you got one side that seems to be advocating for the player agent. You got one side that seems to be advocating for the team. The truth, like most situations, probably lies somewhere in between. And Jets fans are caught in this whiplash effect where it's bad news, it's good news, it's bad news, it's good news, it's bad news, it's good news. And probably nothing gets resolved until either one side comes out and makes a declarative statement, or you know, which could theoretically include a trade.
Right, but I would suspect that it's going to calm down for now. I think that there's no reason at this point.
Yeah.
To Ezzie's point, I think what the agents did, again, the only justification I can think for the agents going through, and we know agents, so we can talk to them and get some insight as to why they operate the manner in which they do, and I think. You know, to me, the only justification for what they've done was because of what I talked about when I began my answer, which is, like, earlier, the talk had calmed down. People weren't talking about this. It was as if somehow everything was resolved with the acquisition of Paul Stastny. Now, if you want to try and force the Jets' hand, then, you know, maybe you call up Pierre LeBrun and you say, hey, you know, we want to convey this, right? And so then somehow you reintroduce the topic. You get it going again. Now, my point was, I don't understand even the agent's logic there, because to me, what they're doing is they're weakening the Jets' hand, because now the Jets, they're saying he still wants to go, even though you've acquired the center. Which, if you could have said that privately to Kevin Cheveldayoff, if that was the truth, and then what happens is he's in a position of strength at least, because it's not out there as significantly.
Right.
So to me, I think I don't understand the play from an agent's perspective either way.
The whole thing is bizarre. The talk, of course, now focuses on a contract. Would the Jets be comfortable in signing Laine to a contract extension? Which leads us to our Illegal Curve question of the day. We want to hear from you on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you via text message. Send your texts to 129090. What contract terms, years and dollars, would you be comfortable the Jets signing Patrick Laine to? Years and dollars for Patrick Laine if he was to sign a contract extension in Winnipeg. What are you comfortable with? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about much more about the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
This is just embracing reality here. You know, is Winnipeg going to feel comfortable paying Patrick Laine 8.5, 9 plus on the wing after next season? And then that's probably going to be what he's going to command. That's probably what he's going to get. And they have other needs. You know, they're still looking for that left side D.
More from Darren Dreger's interview from Monday on TSN 1050 in Toronto. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment of the program brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzie. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So more, of course, here on Patrick Laine with the talk and the reports from Darren Dreger there, saying the Jets, you know, he's implying explicitly saying that are the Jets going to feel comfortable paying Laine $8.5 million on a contract extension or $9 million on a contract extension next year after his current contract expires. And so the question I have for you guys is, why wouldn't the Jets feel comfortable paying Patrick Laine $8.5 or $9 million? If not an epic goal scorer, if not an excellent goal scorer, who is going to be deserving of that kind of money?
Would you guys agree that Mitch Marner is a fair comparable for Patrick Laine? Because I think he is a fair comparable for Patrick Laine. They're not exactly the same type of player, but I think when you look at their age and the contract that Mitch Marner signed, he's on a $10.9 million AAV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yep.
And you could argue that Mitch Marner was overpaid a little bit, but you might have to overpay if you're the Jets. And I get that this is real money, guys. Like, you know, I think, you know, oftentimes, you know, we're desensitized to how much money these guys make, right? Like the difference between $7 and $8 million, you know, whatever, that's just $1 million bucks. But, you know, that's big when you have a flat cap. And we really don't know how much the salary cap is going to go up 2 years from now or 3 years from now, right? Like this is going to be a tough year. You know, we're not going to get into this right now, but like we don't know if there are going to be fans in the stands at all for the 2021 season, right? So you're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars possibly that isn't going into the owner's pockets. Now, this isn't going to affect the coming season, but it's going to affect the seasons after that, right? So, I mean, if you're talking about the difference between, you know, $8 million and $9 million, well, I think, you know, you might have to pay him closer to $9 million. And that's because, again, you're not going to get a goal scorer like this on the free agent market, and you're not really going to be able to trade for one.
Especially because we've been talking about, you know, talk about free agent market. I mean, it's pretty well established that most free agents who have a ton of options aren't coming to Winnipeg. And that's just a fact that has played itself out over and over and over again. It's just the reality of the situation, which is why for the Jets to acquire a superstar, it has to come in one of two ways. It has to come via the draft, or it has to come via a trade. And you have that superstar currently that you've acquired via the draft. And, you know, if it requires you paying them $9 million a year, Dave, on an 8-year contract, which is what we've asked our audience to let us know, what are you comfortable? That's the IC question of the day. What amount of money, how many years are you comfortable signing Patrick Laine for? You know, this is just the reality of the situation. A guy falls into your lap. You develop him. You get him for cheap for the first, you know, 3 years of his contract for sure, and then you have control over it. At least, you start to lose control as it gets closer to that 7-year mark.
Right.
But you have that control right now, so you sign the guy to that long-term contract extension, and you're happy for the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, the idea that, you know, you're going to say, do you feel comfortable having a guy who, in theory, is a 40 to 50 goal scorer on your team every single season? I think most teams would say, yeah, I think we're prepared to pay that. And, you know, from a Jets perspective, again, we've talked about it. You don't just look at what's happening next year. You're looking at, you know, down the road, how does everything impact? How do all the pieces fit? It's a puzzle, right? And your cap is a puzzle and you have to match it up.
Yeah.
But to me, again, you know, I think we talked about it off the break. You're going to have Perreault's not going to be on the books next year.
Four plus $1 million a year.
Paul Stastny's not going to be on the books next year.
$6.5 million. Boom. There's already you've accounted for $10.6 million.
Look, I'm not of the opinion that Cole Perfetti is playing in the NHL next season. I mean, he may get a few games in advance of.
You mean this coming season?
Yeah.
Coming season. Okay.
But in the next year, it's not impossible for him to be able to make that jump. Again, I don't know. But if he is, you've got some cost control in your top six.
Well, yeah, and
a top six,
and
which
is going to be, you know, in his entry level deal,
right,
for 3 years.
That's right? What I mean. So you've got control, a relatively moderate contract there,
right,
at what, $1 million, let's say, and then you've got Ehlers $6 million, Scheifele $6.1 million, Kyle Connor at $7.1 million, and Wheeler at $8.3 million. So the reality is, you've got some measure of control. You know, you've got Ehlers on a great deal.
Yeah.
And you've got Scheifele on a great deal. So you've got a little bit more leeway. Now, there's always the thought, oh, can this guy make more than this guy? But the reality is, we always know. You always go on the back of the guy in front of you. So these contracts increase. They don't stay status quo. They don't go lower because you're making more than a guy who maybe, you know, have taken a better deal.
Guys, we had Marc Dumont on. He works for the Canadiens. And we were talking to him about the Josh Anderson deal. He signed a 7-year, $5.5 million AAV. Like, if you're talking about Anderson being a $5.5 million AAV player, Laine's got to be at least $8 million, if not more, right? So whatever that magic number is, and obviously these contracts are structured in that, you know, some years you might get seven and then it goes up and then
sure,
it goes down.
But so it's all about the AAV.
Right? Yeah, so it's all about the AAV. So, you know, if we're talking about the difference here between, you know, $8.5 million or $9 million, like, who cares? Right? Like, my point is that this type of player is the type of player that you want to overpay. And yes, Chevy's done a great job. You know, the Scheifele contract, Scheifele, you could argue, should be making, you know, $9 million
a
year.
The Scheifele contract's,
right,
a good contract. The Ehlers contract's,
yeah,
a good contract.
Hellebuck even.
The Hellebuck contract, you know, based,
yeah,
on his performance. Even the Morrissey contract,
yeah,
is probably
and,
not
and,
going
and
to hurt
I,
you.
Right. And I'm not saying that, you know, this isn't real money and Chevy should just give, you know, like, write a blank check over to Patrick Laine's agents. But what I'm saying is, like, you know, another guy, you know, who two guys, you know, that are right wingers, because Laine is obviously a winger, and, you know, right winger, and you talk about, you know, Mark Stone, who signed that deal at 26 years old, and Nikita Kucherov, like, these guys are making between $9.5 and $10.5 million a year. I think Kucherov's around 10.5, if not 11. So you're talking about guys, though, that are older, right? So when you're Patrick Laine at 22 years old, yeah, you're going to have to pay a little bit more money to lock him up, because essentially what that does is that puts him in a Jets uniform for a big chunk of his career. Doesn't mean he stays in Winnipeg for his entire career, but 8 years means that that takes him to, you know, 30, 31 years old.
You have him as a member of the Winnipeg Jets for a dozen years, right. Which is, you know, something you could be when you draft the guy second overall. If you said to him, if after you could draft the guy second overall, if he ends up playing for your franchise for a dozen years, you consider that a pretty good draft pick. That's a successful draft pick, Dave.
Well, I mean, look, Mikko Rantanen, $9.25 million. In 281 games, he has 99 goals. In 305 games, Patrick Laine has 138 goals. So the fact is, I think if you're talking Patrick Laine contract, my guess is you're looking at $9.5 to $10.5 million. My guess is his agents are starting with double digits.
You know,
would be my guess. My guess is his agents are going to ask for $10 million a season.
And so let's say they ask for $10 million a year, and the Jets, you know, in terms of free agents or in terms of big ticket deals that they have to do next season, it's Laine. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be Pionk. Laine and Pionk are the two guys that you really have to get under contract.
I don't think Pionk is going to be too contentious.
No, he's an RFA. So, I mean, again, so would Laine be. But those are the guys that are going to command a lot of money. You know, you have the Perreault coming off the books.
Lowry's a UFA next year, too.
Yeah, but Lowry's contract...
Believe me, it's not going to be huge.
He's at 2.9 right now. I mean, you know, he'd be lucky to probably get that again, given his offensive totals have completely dried up.
I don't know about that. He's pretty valuable to the team. Like, I don't think we're talking about $5 million a year.
No,
but there could be a raise there.
There could be, but if you want to sign him, it's not going to be a back-breaking contract to sign Adam Lowry.
Right. Yeah.
And again, and then to your point about Perfetti, if Perfetti comes in as your second-line center, not this coming year, but the year after that, you get him for very low for 3 years on his entry-level deal, and let's say he tears it up after those 3 years. Well, guess whose contract is coming off the books 3 years from then? Blake Wheeler.
Yeah. So and you also
there to go. I mean, it's cyclical, and it's and the money comes in and the money comes out. So if you need to worry about paying Perfetti 4 years down the road from now, and that could be why you're afraid to sign Laine long term. Well, Wheeler's money could be used for Perfetti if it turns out to be necessary.
It's like, you know, I remember from my first year accounting course, LIFO and FIFO, first in, first out, last in, first out. Right. I have no idea what that means, but I just
I can't
I
believe you took an accounting course.
Yeah, I got an A actually.
Oh,
so
that's even more surprising.
I actually pursued accounting for a little bit, but back then I was still finding myself. So, but when you're talking about, you know,
how's that search for yourself going? Have you found yourself?
He found himself in a 7-Eleven late at night.
It was a dark time.
No, but you know, when you're talking about these types of contracts,
as long as he's not finding himself like Jeffrey Toobin, then we're good.
Yeah, I'm not going to go there, Drew. But
easy, Tiger.
You know, when you're talking about Cole Perfetti being on an entry-level deal, you also have to factor in you're going to have players like Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg still on an entry-level deal.
Right.
And that's important because those guys factor into your top six, right? Like, I think ideally...
In terms of paying your top six.
Well, no, but what I mean is I think, you know, Chevy, and we know GMs project their roster not just 1 year into the future, but they do 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And I think you're looking at that defense, and obviously, you know, Josh Morrissey, Dylan DeMello, Neil Pionk, you know, I would probably throw in a guy like Tucker Pullman based on his age. I mean, you're factoring those guys in, but you're also putting in Dylan Sandberg, Ville Heinola, and, you know, a guy like maybe a Declan Chisholm down the
road. Young players always come with their affordable contracts to replace other players, which allows you to pay for existing players who've accomplished something. It's constant churn of the roster that allows you to find the money necessary to pay guys like this.
Yeah.
So the idea that the Jets should be afraid of paying Patrick Laine, you know, 8.5, 9, 9.5, 10, whatever the dollar amount ends up being, because of, you know, because of salary cap constraints. Well, I mean, that argument doesn't really hold water for me right now, because you can't spend that money. You're not going to spend that money on a free agent. You're just not, because you shouldn't. You know, the last big free agent signing the Jets made was who? Kulikov. probably, right? Kulikov?
I mean, maybe.
In terms of AAV, in terms of years?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, come on. That didn't really work out so well. I mean, no offense to Dmitry Kulikov, but he was overpaid from the moment that he put his ink on the paper to sign that contract.
Right.
So when you have a guy who's already a member of your team, and if you can keep him as a member of your team, that's how you get superstars. Free agency is not going to be the panacea for the Jets' problems. The free agents that the Jets get are guys who are looking for one-year deals or guys who are trying to, you know, hang on in the NHL, as we've seen so far this offseason.
Guys like Jets are a draft and develop team. All of their core players, like Shifley and Connor and Ehlers and Hellebuck and Wheeler and Morrissey, were all guys that they either drafted or they've held on to.
And when they draft well, they have to pay those guys, right, regardless of their position.
Right.
And so that's why the Jets need to pay Patrick Laine. And the argument that the Jets might not be comfortable doing so is absolutely crazy, and hopefully isn't the reality of the situation. Time will tell. Again, our illegal curve question of the day. We want to hear from you. What amount of money, how many years, how many dollars in terms of an average annual value would you be comfortable with the Jets signing Patrick Laine to in terms of a contract extension?
There's a lot of responses.
I know. We're going to read those responses at illegal curve. You can also text them to us, 129090. Standard messaging rates will apply. When we come back, more on the Jets. We're going to be talking about Christian Vesalainen. He goes over. He's being loaned to a team in Finland, Sammy Niku's name being bandied about in trades, and of course Jack Rossadick's name is still out there as well. More on Trade Talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
So how do you acquire those pieces? It's not that easy in free agency. So initially that was why Laine's name was out there. Roslovic's name has been out there. Sammy Niku's name has been out there. So we'll see if it does heat up. But, you know, Pierre's report on Thursday certainly kind of got the juices flowing again.
It's true. Roslovic's name has been out there. Niku's name has been out there. Trade talks continue to swirl around the Winnipeg Jets, not only around Patrick Laine, around other members of the franchise, both Niku, of course, and Roslovic, were once had bright futures here in Winnipeg that seem to be a little bit more cloudy by the day, much like it is outside right now, a little bit more cloudy. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So this week we got a little bit of news about Christian Vesalainen as well, in that Vesalainen finally found a home for this coming season, and that's back playing in Finland, going to play overseas, loaned officially by the Jets organization with the startup of the AHL currently unknown and the startup of the NHL currently unknown. Vesalainen will go home and play overseas in Finland. Is there more here than a simple loan agreement? Because a lot of the other players the Jets have loaned really never created much of a buzz. It's like, okay, that makes sense. With Vesalainen, it seems like there's something more bubbling underneath the surface there, Dave.
In what regard?
Maybe his happiness in Winnipeg, his happiness with the organization. Maybe that's too strong of a word, but it seems like this might be a player, who isn't necessarily thrilled about the possibility of having to come back to North America if and when the AHL and NHL restart.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's playing with HPK, which is a team he's familiar with. He won a championship with them, a few years back. He's a versatile player. I mean, I thought he had a really good year last year. Relatively speaking, I mean, the Moose team wasn't particularly a strong team in the AHL, and he found chemistry with David Gustafson and Christian Reichel, and I thought that, especially in the last 10-game segment for the Moose, they were really developing. So, these guys, their goal is to play in the NHL, and, Pascal Vinton talks about it. You want guys who want more. You don't want guys who are complacent and are happy with their lot in life. And, look, for every Jansen Harkins who doesn't complain, just puts his head down and works and works and works and gets to that goal, that's great. But there's far more players who are in their early 20s who want and are a little more vocal. Now, to be honest with you, I never heard Vesalainen complain. I was around him as much as anybody from an outsider perspective.
From a media perspective.
Well, that's what I mean, like someone not connected to the team. And he was always fine. I mean, he was engaged playing with the Moose. So, look, I don't know. I mean, the problem with using, Finnish translation, services, via Google Translate, is you don't know how accurate it is. So you hear, you read some of the reports, and you're like, okay, it seems vague in terms of him coming back to Winnipeg next season, right, if there isn't depending on the way it looks, he may want to play with HPK. But to be honest with you, I think it's from the Jets' perspective, they just want to get him the plays to play, and that's it.
Yeah, and this is kind of my take on Vesalainen, and it might be a cold take because most of them are. But, you know, Dave obviously watched Vesalainen a lot more than I did. But, you know, his numbers, offensive numbers, were not good. And I realized that, you know, the Moose went through a lot of injuries. And, you know, I'll take your word for it, Dave, that, you know, David Gustafson and Vesalainen found good chemistry. And obviously, you know, as the season progressed, the second half of the season, I think you'd agree, was better than the first half, right? 12 goals in 60 games is not maybe what you'd want from a guy that you used a first round pick on. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, and again, I don't know if this is the case, but I wonder, you know, if the Jets value Vesalainen as much as they did when they drafted him back in 2017, right? Like, what's the long-term plan here? Because I agree with Dave. Like, this is the, even though I was a little bit surprised, you know, that Vesalainen didn't find a team earlier. Like, I don't know why this couldn't have happened 3 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I mean, maybe there's a valid reason, because I think we all agree that he's been in Finland the whole time, right? Like, so travel isn't an issue here. So maybe it was just, you know, I don't know, maybe if he wanted to go back to Jokerit, and the Continental Hockey League, the last time I checked, isn't starting, right? So I don't know if that was an issue or what, but I think, you know, going back to what I said before, I'm just not sure, you know, what Vesalainen's ceiling is here. Like, what's the long-term play? Like, you don't hear Vesalainen's name a lot in terms of, you know, being a big part of the Jets for the upcoming season. So you got to assume, you know, if there's an American Hockey League season, he's going to come back and play with the Moose. But, you know, then what? Like, I'm not sure. I feel like, you know, there might be a little bit of a stalled development here. And again, this is just me speculating here. I'm just not sure, because I think when Vesalainen was drafted and we saw the size, and you know, Dave makes a good point. I mean, he played in Finland's top league with SN Hämeenlinna. I'm probably not pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
But he had a really good season, and there's no doubt, Dave. And again, you can speak to, you know, his skill more than I've seen him, obviously, you know, play a little bit for the Jets and a tiny bit for the Moose. But there's obviously a skill set there, right? Like, this guy can shoot the puck.
That's
like,
right.
This guy can skate. This guy is not, you know, a player that you watch and you're like, oh, this guy's a fourth liner. Like, he's got high-end talent, but I wonder, you know, what the future is there with the Jets, because it seems like other players in the organization have passed him.
I would agree with that. He's not that he's a forgotten man, but that, you know, he played that, nobody expected him to make the Jets in his rookie year, and he didn't. But, you know, you thought that the developmental curve would be that it wouldn't necessarily take him 3 years and he wouldn't necessarily yet be at the NHL level, but that's almost where we're sitting today. Because I don't know of anybody that really has him penciled into the Jets lineup for this coming season whenever it begins. And I think he would have to play his way onto the roster, you know, with an impressive training camp. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing or something that, you know, he can't do. He certainly has the skill set and the talent to do so. But I wonder that if his development is maybe slowed or it's taking a little bit longer, and all of a sudden, for a guy who was, a lot of people thought the Jets may have, you know, got a bit of a steal there late in the first round, is that maybe all of a sudden there is a bit of a roadblock, right, or a bit of a hindrance to his continued development and eventually transitioning to the NHL level.
Right, and he's only 21 years old, guys. Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's 26 years old, and you can start talking about, you know, maybe the Jets are going to move him. You know, I just think when you're talking about players like Jack Roslovic and Sammy Niku, because they're so much more NHL ready, to me, like, you want those guys in your lineup. Like, if you trade Roslovic, then sure, a guy like Jansen Harkins can maybe move up to the third line, like you've talked about, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe Adam Lowry becomes your fourth line, and, you know, Andrew Kopp is on one of those two lines in your bottom six, your middle six, whatever you want to call it. But I think that's something that I think is going to be very interesting to watch going forward, because I think, again, there's no doubt that he started to form chemistry with David Gustafson, and, you know, he got better as the season progressed. I think that it's just one of those prospects that maybe you expected more out of at this stage.
That's a good way of putting it. Maybe expected more out of him at this stage.
Right.
And with the uncertainty surrounding an upcoming AHL season, I mean, I think that's going to be really difficult for a lot of prospects, not only in the Jets organization, but around the world of hockey,
mm-hmm.
if they can't be all together, if they can't be playing in a system that is the same system as the NHL level, you wonder, what is that going to do to their development? What is that going to do to their growth if all of a sudden, you know, player X is playing in for a team in the Finnish league, and player Y is playing for a team in the Swedish league, and player Z is playing for a team in the Swiss league? All of a sudden, these guys who, you know, would need another year of chemistry and another year of gelling selling and another year of adapting to the quote-unquote North American style, won't have that year.
Right.
So what does that do to their curve?
Well, the only thing I would say is that, but they're playing versus the prospects who, like Jonathan Kovacevic, you've got Dylan Sandberg.
Leon Gavanke.
They're actually starting in Germany now, because originally it was going to be pushed back to December, and now I think it's mid-November. But you're right. There are guys who aren't going to be playing.
Guys who won't find
CJC is a guy we just spoke to. I mean, that's another guy who's going to be. And it's interesting because that's what Pascal Vincent talked about when we did a end of season availability with him. And, you know, I think I asked him about players, you know, being in shape for whenever the season began again. And he said, look, we're going to see who, you know, really put the time in for training and who didn't. And now the interesting thing is, again, I do wonder about what the advantage will be for a guy like Christian Vesalainen to go and play for Mikael Burden, for David Gustafsson, for a whole host of players who can go and play every day and they can be training versus guys who are, you know, and CJC's talked about it with me when I spoke to him, talked about the difficulty in the mentality of you're training, but you don't know when the start date is. So you're training generally, most of these players are so regimented that they look at their summers and they go, okay, my summer's going to look like this, 2 weeks off the ice, then I'm on, and then I'm training, and I start to ramp up at this point.
Right.
These guys, unfortunately, have to, and he's told me, he's like, you know, you almost have, like, false starts, because you start to ramp up your training, thinking, okay, it's going to look like this, then it gets pushed back a little bit, and you don't know. So that, to me, is the interesting thing. Not necessarily the guys who are playing, what they'll look like, because I actually think they'll be fine. I think their conditioning is going to be good. I think it's the guys who aren't playing, which is going to be the problem.
And I think, you know, to give Jets fans hope, you look at a guy like Jesse Puljujarvi, who fell out of favor with the Oilers under Peter Chiarelli, mm-hmm. and then he goes and plays in the SM League for 2 years with Karpat, and he absolutely tore it up, right? Like, he was almost a point-per-game player there, and now the Oilers have signed, I think it was a two-year deal, that he signed with the Oilers, right? So there's a good chance Vesalainen puts up some nice numbers in Finland, comes back, plays for the Moose, hopefully,
comes into Jets training camp
and you know, maybe he's, you know, on the third or fourth line, we don't know, but there is always that chance that, you know, he finds his offensive game a little bit more in Finland, and then a year from now, you know, he's on the Jets roster. It's not a foregone conclusion, you know, that Vesalainen isn't ever going to be successful on the Jets. It just, right now, we just haven't seen it yet, because unfortunately the results at the AHL level have been mixed.
I want to make note before we go to break, Dave, of the interview you conducted with CJ Cease. That's available on our website, illegalcurve.com. Dave Minuk, CJ Cease.
It was a great interview. I don't know. I called CJ. He didn't answer my
no,
text.
Well, he doesn't know who you are.
Obviously, likes Dave better.
When Dave Minuk calls, he answers the phone. So one-on-one between Dave and CJ Cease, that's available on illegalcurve.com. When we come back, how much is the upcoming expansion draft playing a role in the Jets' pursuit of a top four defenseman? Talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Now let's get to the next team, and it's the Winnipeg Jets. And I believe, Bill, you're going to do us the honors.
From the Winnipeg Jets, the Golden Knights select Chris Thorburn forward.
Going back into the archives, that was when the Vegas Golden Knights selected Chris Thorburn to join their team when the Golden Knights entered the NHL a number of years ago. We remember the dream run they went on all the way to the Stanley Cup final that season.
I remember where I was watching that, because no big deal. I was in Chicago, because if you remember back in 2017, the expansion draft happened the day before day one of the draft in Chicago.
Right.
And I just gotten into a bar, and I met up with a bunch of the Winnipeg media that were there, like Weber and Jason Bell. Paulie Edmonds was there, Huss.
We know who's in the Winnipeg media.
Well, not everybody was there. I mean, it's an exclusive group.
True. I couldn't crack that, but that list of esteemed individuals.
I remember I walked in. It just so happened that I walked in right when the Golden Knights were making that selection.
What was your walk-in music?
And you remember, it was a shocker. Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just the glass breaking. That's how I walk into any bar, Dave.
Welcome
Not
back.
So much anymore, but.
Yeah, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich, located in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Com. Remember, go out, support your small businesses, especially right now during the pandemic. Do your part. If you don't necessarily want to eat at a restaurant, I get that. Take home some food, order it online, or order it from them, go pick it up, take it home, whatever it might be. Help support some of your small businesses like our friends at Bernstein's Deli. So, you know, everybody sits here right now in, you know, October, the end of October, and they still point to the hole on the Jets' left side of their defense, that top four hole that we've been talking about ad nauseum for, oh gosh, I don't know, 6 months, however long it's been. It seems like it's even been longer than that. The question I have for you guys, with the upcoming Seattle expansion draft and the Jets, you know, needing to be in a position to protect seven forwards, three defensemen, and a goalie, how much of that 7-3-1 expansion draft protection list do you think is playing a factor in the Jets acquiring or not acquiring another top four defenseman?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I was thinking about this, and, you know, just going back to, you know, this question of, you know, whether or not the Jets need to or will acquire another left side defenseman, I think there's still a little bit of a hysteria here, you know, involving that left side. And what I mean by that is, you know, you go out and you re-sign Dylan DeMello. And we talked about this on this show, and, you know, that move was applauded by everyone. Like, really good signing. DeMello's a really good, solid, right shot defenseman. A good fit for the Jets, right? So Morrissey and DeMello, most people would pencil that pairing in there, right? And so Neil Pionk is your second pairing right side defenseman. And you assume that Derek Forbort is probably, based on who the Jets have under contract now, Derek Forbort is most likely right on that second pair on the left side. And, you know, whether or not you think Forbort is better suited for a third pairing role, I like Forbort, and I think, you know, it is a little bit of a slight upgrade over Dmitry Kulikov. So what I'm saying is, if your top six is those four defensemen that I mentioned, like Morrissey, DeMello, Pionk, and Forbort, and then you throw in Nathan Beaulieu and Tucker Poolman, and, you know, then maybe, you know, Sammy Niku is your seventh, or Lucas Abiza, whoever that is, right, guys? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that defense is serviceable. And I think if you go into next season with that defense, you know, it's better than the defense that started last year. Because you remember, the penalty kill, you know, the shots against, all of those types of metrics, you know, the defensive impact that Dylan DeMello had, the Jets' defense was better. So what I'm saying is, like, I realize a guy like Mackenzie Weegar on Florida is a guy that's been floated out there. And, by the way, Travis Dermott, who we talked about last week, has re-upped with Toronto. And I thought Travis Dermott would be, you know, a nice piece on that left side on the second pair. But obviously he's going to be on the third pair of the Leafs. And, you know, at $800,000, what a bargain that is for Dermott, right? But I just don't know, like what are we talking about here? If we're talking about a Mackenzie Weegar, like, are you acquiring him because you don't want to expose someone in the expansion draft? Like, that might be a consideration, but you're acquiring him just because you think he's an upgrade over what you currently have. And Derek Forbort then becomes your third pairing guy, and then Nathan Beaulieu is your seventh defenseman, and so on and so forth. It bumps other guys. So,
right, but if you acquire Weegar, then that puts you into a position where you can't necessarily, you don't have an obvious 7-3-1 decision to make at that point when it comes to the protection.
You have an
list.
Obvious 7-2-1 because you assume it's going to be Morrissey and Pionk.
Morrissey
likely.
And Pionk, you would
right.
obviously
or
protect
DeMello.
If you're acquiring Weegar, I mean, does that mean you are then going with the 8 skaters, 1 goaltender protection list, or does that mean you're risking losing a guy like? I'm going to assume that if you acquire Weegar, you're going to protect him, and then are you all of a sudden risking losing a guy like DeMello that you just signed to a contract extension, Dave?
Yeah, and I suspect you're not going to try. You're going to do whatever you can to protect that asset because you felt that it was sufficient to sign for a 4-year deal. Now, would I think the Jets be adverse to making a trade that would improve them for this year? No, because I think, again, and we've talked about this throughout the course of, you know, our shows, is that, you know, you have a core group that you have to show, and you have a fan base that you have to show that you're going for it. And if you have to, you know, take a risk, well, sometimes you have to take risks to have success.
I mean, the risk being that you might then end up losing a player at the expansion.
If you have to lose, I mean, now, remember, Pionk's an RFA with arbitration rights, so you don't know exactly what that's going to look like in terms of long term. But, like, to me, I would be thinking that, you know, for this core group, you can't say, well, you know, we got to think about the expansion draft and we can't afford to lose anyone, so we can't go and get someone.
So you can't punt on the year Or punt you, on you can't well, punt on acquiring a left side asset because of the possibility of the impact on the expansion draft.
And you know, especially because you know, to Ezzie's point, and what we've always talked about is that you need 10 defensemen. So if you can shift guys like Forbort down one, and if you can shift Beaulieu down one, you know, and again, we don't know what Sandberg and Hanola, they're the X factors because they're the youth. We don't know where they're going to play next year. So that's a big question mark, of course, because maybe they're ready to make the jump. Maybe they're not. We'll find out. But so that does add a layer, obviously, to the discussion, because obviously if you can insert those guys, you have no concerns. If one of Dylan Sandberg or Ville Heinola come in and play just out of their minds on the second pairing, well, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, obviously you're through the moon because that's exactly what you want.
So do you think Cheveldayoff might be waiting until the next season begins before making that determination about it, the need for another left side defenseman?
Well, this is the thing, Drew. Like,
to see what he has in Sandberg
and there's a lot of time. There's at least 2.5 months here, roughly. Like, we don't know when the season is starting, but there's, you know, roughly 2.5 months before the season's going to start. And, you know, as the defense is currently constructed, like, there's a good chance that the Jets go into the season with this defense, and then maybe, you know, closer to the trade deadline, whenever that is, you know, then you maybe shore up your defense. But going back to what you were asking before, like, to me, it makes a lot more sense for Chevy to go out and acquire Mackenzie Weegar or, you know, let's use, like, a Vince Dunn. Right,
sure.
Because he hasn't signed yet with the Blues. Again, Weegar and Dunn are just examples here. Because Florida might hold on to Weegar, right? And St. Louis might sign Dunn and hang on to him. But those types of defensemen, those younger type of defensemen make a lot more sense. Nate Schmidt, to me, never made sense. And the reason it never made sense is because he's under contract for 5 years at, you know, whatever he's making, $6 million, $6.5 million AAV. And that doesn't make sense to tie when you already have Josh Morrissey tied up long-term, and you've got Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg coming in on the left side. Why are you going to commit that much money to a guy? Like, Jets fans wanted Nate Schmidt. Nate Schmidt's a very good defenseman, and that was a fantastic trade for Vancouver. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, I think Jets fans might need to not lower their expectations, but just change what they think Chevy might be going after. Because Nate Schmidt, to me, or a defenseman like that, isn't the type of guy. Because if you acquire him, you also have to consider that will take, you know, money away your ability to sign other players, right? Including, you know, Laine's next deal.
I think the quest for that left side defenseman is still a fascinating one for the Winnipeg Jets because of the unknown yet potential that both Sandberg and Heinola have. I mean, and that's why, you know, if there was a veteran left side defenseman the Jets could get for 1 year, not necessarily costing you Jack Roslovic or not necessarily costing you Sammy Niku, that seems to be more appealing than, you know, signing a guy to that's got a 5-year contract or a guy that's going to be under contract for 4 years that could potentially block the continued development of a Heinola or a Sandberg. But that's definitely a fascinating aspect to this offseason that continues to play out. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Stephen Ellis of the Hockey News. We'll talk about the Jets, talk about the NHL with Stephen, talk a little bit about the World Juniors upcoming as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number 2 up next on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's where we've asked our Illegal Curve question of the day. What contract terms, years, and salary would you be comfortable getting Patrick Laine under contract for in a contract extension? You can also send us your comments via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates will apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Hockey News, we're pleased to welcome to the program Stephen Ellis. Stephen, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us on Saturday morning. How are you doing?
I'm great. How about you guys?
Doing fine and dandy, Stephen. Always appreciate your time, so thank you for joining us. You know, obviously, we want to talk to you, look around the NHL, you know, the scuttlebutt, some of your opinions about what has gone on. It's sort of weird, you know, of course, it being, you know, the 24th of October, we would be, you know, a few weeks into the start of the regular season. Instead, it feels almost like late July, not weather-wise, but in terms of the NHL calendar, now that the free agency is, you know, certainly not done, but it's quieted down and the draft is complete. This sort of feels like right where the GMs and a lot of the teams are beginning to take their summer vacations, albeit in the end of October right now. So, Stephen, to me, you know, the question I have for you is, if you had to pick, you know, one team from the winner category and one team from the loser category so far in the off season of the NHL, who would those respective teams be?
Well, for sure, I'd have to say that the winner has to be the Buffalo Sabres, just the way they were able to go out there. They got out Eric Staal, which I think at the time some people were wondering if he would even play, would he consider retirement at that point. But that gave the Buffalo Sabres another center that they really needed. There wasn't a lot of depth after Jack Eichel. But then they went out and got Taylor Hall, and I think even if you only get him for one season, you're going to get incredible value for him. $8 million, I think in another year, he would have been closer to 9, even maybe 10, depending on how the market's gone. But obviously the market's a lot different this year. And for him to go out there, he's going to play with Jack Eichel. That's going to be probably the most, like, the best winger Jack Eichel has ever played with in his career. And we saw how good Eichel was last year. So if he's got someone even better to play with, I think that's going to just do wonders for both of them. And then if they lose him, fine. You know what? It's a year where they're still in rebuilding, so it's not like they're losing a lot. And worst case, they can also just trade them at the trade deadline. So I think the Buffalo Sabres for sure are winners. Vancouver, though, they're on the losing side. They didn't. Braden Holtby is coming off of a pretty poor season, so we got to wonder, really, is this fully for Seattle? Is that why they signed him? And I'd have to say yes, but it does give Satya Demko some competition, obviously. But they didn't go out there. Nate Schmidt was a good addition, but they didn't address the offensive needs that they needed, the secondary scoring, and that's because they're tied to so many bad contracts. So the Canucks kind of put themselves in that situation, and that's why I consider them a loser this year.
Stephen, Drew mentioned it earlier, you know, it's really quieted down. Like, we had the Travis Dermott signing, and, you know, we've had some minor deals, but I think, you know, everybody's waiting for players like, you know, a Mike Hoffman, or an Alex Galchenyuk, you know, Eric Halla, players like that are still out there, and we expect those guys to sign eventually, but, you know, nothing's guaranteed with this flat cap. But, you know, one of those teams that I imagine, you know, you're keeping a close eye on, and a lot of people are keeping a close eye on, is the Tampa Bay Lightning, because, you know, we expect, you know, one of Tyler Johnson, you know, Alex Killorn, you know, maybe a guy like Yanni Gourde is traded, but, you know, it seems very quiet on that front. Do you think there's, you know, still a chance, you know, that a team might try to offer sheet one of those players? Sergachev is one of those options, obviously, Anthony Cirelli, but what do you expect to happen there? Do you think it could remain quiet on the Lightning front for some time?
I do, and I think we kind of learned a lot from last summer of how many big restricted free agents waited to the last minute to sign deals, and I think we could see that here. Obviously, ideally, the Tampa Bay Lightning would love to move out Tyler Johnson's $5 million cap hit. They put him on waivers. Nobody wanted him. I think that was surprising. At the same time, that is a big cap hit, even with the waiver rules. So it is going to be a tough one. They're going to have to move, obviously, more than just one guy at this point, Tyler Johnson being $5 million. Yanni Gourde would be a great guy to move, but at the same time, like, you got to wonder, is moving someone like Eric Chernak out to bring in picks or other assets, would that be a good bet? I think so, because Sergachev's going to take a lot of money. And how much is Sorelli going to get? Like, that's the thing. You get some people who are valuing him at $6, $7 million just because of what he brings to the table. And I know the numbers haven't been there fully in his career, but he's such a dynamic two-way player that just does everything right. So you would see him getting a lot of money there. So that's a really tough one where they're going to have to move a couple players. Obviously, Victor Hedman and Ryan McDonagh, they command almost $14 million on defense themselves. But then after that, Braden Coburn and Luke Schenner are very limited contracts, so you don't have to worry about that. So they are going to have to move a couple forwards. It's just going to be tough. And obviously the one that really hurts, I think, that people aren't talking about is Andre Vasilevsky's $9.5 million hit that comes in this year. That definitely gave them all less room to work with. And, of course, there's always the question of how much money do you really want to give to a goalie? But he's 26. He's got a Vezina. He's looked so good in his career, obviously. You want him to continue doing what he's doing. But that's a hit that I think is going to hurt the team just as much, and people aren't talking about it.
Just even on Tuesday, the Blackhawks took a page out of the Rangers playbook and sent out a letter out to kind of announce to their fans that they were in a whatever you want to call it, a rebuild, a soft rebuild. Do you think that they're going to be able to do similar to what the Rangers did, though? I mean, obviously the Rangers got lucky with the lottery, but in terms of, especially with that older core, you know, selling that to a fan base that has an expectation of winning. But how do you do that to the older core, like the Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith? What do you think they're going to, how do would they handle this idea of this, quote, rebuild?
That's tough because you got Kane and you got Toews. They're 31, 32 years old, respectively, and they've got three more years on their deal. And if they're going to be playing bottom-level hockey that entire time, how long until they request a trade out of there? And the problem is, yeah, they do have no movement clauses, of course, but those are big contracts that this late in their careers, as good as they played in the last couple of years, you got to wonder how easy would that be to move. And so that's a tough one there. Obviously, I think the Blackhawks would have loved to move on from Duncan Keith at this point because his performance is not as good as it used to be. He still commands over $5.5 million, and that'd be a nice little guy to move on from if they could for the cap relief. But, of course, they just don't have a strong enough defense core after that. I think it became very clear, they didn't even need to put a letter out, that they were not going to take this season entirely seriously when they moved on from Corey Crawford and then didn't address it. If Colin Delia and Malcolm Subban are your goaltenders, obviously it's hard to take that very seriously. But this is a team that tied up a lot of money to guys like Zach Smith to play bottom line minutes at almost $3.5 million, and that's tough. And obviously getting Dominic Kubalik this year for $3.7 million for the next 2 years was a great value for a guy who just hit 30 goals. But at the same time, you got to be careful to putting too much money to goal scorers in some cases. DeBrincat had an off year this year. He made $6.4 million. You got to hope he continues to hit the 30-40 goal threshold every year to make that worth it. So there's been some bad cap management over the years, but I think this time, you know, it's good that they're willing to admit defeat. The problem is they just have too many pieces of the old core that what are you going to do with it?
Stephen Ellis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Stephen covers the NHL for the Hockey News. You know, Stephen, we're always curious here in Winnipeg to know perspectives from people outside of the city. And all the chatter for the last, you know, 2 weeks or so has been about Patrick Laine and the potential or the rumors or the trade demand that isn't a trade demand. A player is disgruntled, then he's not disgruntled, and back and forth the whiplash goes. From your perspective, outside of Peg City here, what are your thoughts about the possibility, or what came to mind when it comes to the possibility of trading Patrick Laine?
If you believed everything you hear on the internet, it would definitely seem like, yes, he needs a new home. But I think for Jets fans, I think it'd be such a disappointment if he did have to leave. He had a short playoff run, obviously, this year, just the one game, but we saw an improved Patrick Laine this season compared to the year after. And obviously, there's still a lot of questions about his play, and if he's not scoring all the goals all the time, is he as effective? This is a guy where if Winnipeg, I predicted them to win the Stanley Cup last year. They didn't win it. Obviously, there was an early exit. But I thought Laine was going to be a huge part of that. I still believe, because he's 22 and he's putting up numbers that most players aren't even coming close to that at his age. He'd be such a guy where if you moved on from him, I think 5 years from down the line, it would be, he'd win the Stanley Cup. He might even win a goal-scoring race and be like, wow, we wish we kept him. He's a guy where it's so hard to get guys with that much goal-scoring skill. You don't move him easily. And I think that's also the thing. There was a talk of moving him last year and then this year too. He's not an easy guy to move. Yeah, he's going to be an RFA in next summer, but, or whenever the free agency is, but he's still, you know, if you're getting 30, 35 goals, 60 points out of his cap hit, I think that's something that you want to keep. But obviously there's other needs the team has to address. I just solely from a, not from a team needs perspective, but solely from a, I feel like you would hate to move him situation. I don't think you'd want to move him, but that's just because he's so hard to come by in terms of what talent he brings.
Stephen, I wanted to ask you about the World Juniors because the schedule came out it was either 3 or 4 days ago, and I know that you cover the World of Prospects and the World Juniors for the Hockey News along with Ryan Kennedy and others, and you had an article about, you know, all the good players that we're going to be able to watch this year in Edmonton because, of course, you know, in any other year, players like Alexi Lafreniere, you know, Quinton Byfield, maybe even, you know, Jets draft pick Cole Perfetti, you know, maybe those players wouldn't be available to Team Canada, but not only are those players going to be available, but you could have, you know, as you tweeted out, you could have Kirby Dach potentially, you know, as your number one center, speaking of the Chicago Blackhawks. Do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that, you know, some of these players aren't going to be in game action, you know, prior to that? You know, does that concern you? Do you think that concerns Team Canada at all? Or are these guys professionals and you know that, you know, they're going to be ready even though, you know, the WHL season, the OHL season, for example, you know, won't be underway by then?
See, that's a tough one. For me, I think getting into game action, especially this year, is extremely important. And that's why last year I made the argument that Kirby Dach, he was not playing much. He didn't have, I think it was like a 15-game stretch where he didn't have a point in the NHL leading up to the World Juniors. That was the situation where I thought, you know, let him play, let him be in a winning situation, let him get those key minutes. This year, obviously, it's a little different. Most of the team hasn't been playing unless you're in the Quebec League. And for a guy like Kirby Dach or a guy like Alexis Lafreniere, like, Kirby Dach's already played a full year in the NHL. Alexis Lafreniere, he's already been the best player of the World Juniors. He's already played there twice. Do they have anything to gain? I'd say just solely from getting back into a game situation, yes, because while we don't exactly know for sure when training camp is going to be, and there's been talks of in December, January, such and such, but again, everything seems to be moving. Like, we might not start the season until February 1st, could even go later than that. So in that case, I think you want your players to be playing in those key situations. But then there's other guys to keep an eye on. Capo Caco, Jack Hughes, guys like that, where you got to wonder, are they going to play in this tournament? Even Marco Rossi, the Austrian player who Austria is in the tournament this year. So those are guys who don't necessarily need to be playing there. They've proven they're obviously talented enough that they can move on to the next level. But at the same time, if they're not playing, this gives them a chance to not only play, but get into a tournament style where you got to be good every single night, go, 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 in a situation that they haven't been in a while. So I think that it'd be a very beneficial to go there. But of course, the NHL teams might completely see differently. And we saw last year with Kirby Dach and Noah Dobson, two guys that could have played for Team Canada but didn't and didn't really play much during the NHL season as it was.
Stephen Ellis covers the world of hockey for the Hockey News. Stephen, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Take care, Stephen. When we come back, we'll take a look at the Odd Shark Inbox, and we'll give our power rankings of the Central Division and a potential All-Canadian Division. Where do the Jets stack up among some of their peers? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
John, I really feel we've got a real good competitive team right now. A lot of these different things that we had looked at to improve our team has been taken care of.
That's Montreal Canadiens head coach Claude Julien speaking with TSN's John Liu about the Habs offseason and about their outlook and their chances for this upcoming year. The Habs would be on one of my short lists for teams that have improved themselves this offseason. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Rumors is open. You probably need a laugh. I think everybody really needs a laugh right now in the time of COVID. They're enforcing all the safety measures. There's social distancing. You're separated by, you know, the 6 feet. All the stuff that you need to do to be in business and to be a successful business right now in the time of COVID. Rumors is doing that. So get into the club. Have some laughs. Have a good time. Do it while being safe, as you will be at Rumors. Get your tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. And like we said earlier about Bernstein's, help support your local small businesses. Get out there. Do whatever is necessary. If you're not necessarily comfortable going out, order in food. If you don't necessarily want to do that, buy a gift card. You know, the holiday season is upcoming. Buy your gift card. Support local business. I can't stress it enough. These local business is the backbone of our economy, and we need to do everything in our power, because government has certainly abdicated their responsibility, particularly this provincial government. Do what is necessary to help our small local businesses keep their head above water in the time of COVID.
So that means that Dave and I should expect a gift card? for the holidays.
I'm not giving you guys anything. My presence is gift enough for both of you on a weekly basis. Let's talk about the Central Division. Let's talk about a potential all-Canadian division.
Sure.
Where do you think the Jets would rank in both of those two divisions?
Yeah, I'll go first,
Ezzy.
You know, they'd be towards the top. I definitely don't think that they would be right at the top, but you know, if you want to start with the Canadian division here, because, you know, Pierre LeBrun's reporting and others, you know, seems to indicate there still is a strong chance that there's an all-Canadian division.
Our buddy Mike McIntyre wrote about this. Right. He did this sort of power ranking as well. Obviously, great minds think alike. He wrote about that in today's Winnipeg Free Press.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, for me, Toronto is still the best Canadian team. And I realize that the playoff results have not been there, and a lot of people are putting the Vancouver Canucks at the top of that list, but you know, I agree with Stephen Ellis. I don't know if the Canucks were, you know, the quote-unquote biggest loser of free agency, but when you lose Jacob Markstrom, who's arguably a top-five goalie in the league, at the very least, guys, he's a top-10 goalie in the league, when you lose Markstrom, and yes, Thatcher Demko is a good player, a good goalie, and, you know, Braden Holtby is going to come in there and, you know, we assume he's going to get the majority of starts, but I just think, you know, that's a downgrade going from Markstrom to Holtby. So for that reason alone, you know, I think the Canucks are you know, potentially going to take a step back. Yes, I like the Nate Schmidt acquisition. I mean, there's tons of talent there with Elias Pettersson, you know, Quinn Hughes, Brock Besser. We know the names. So for me, Toronto and Vancouver are right at the top of the Canadian teams, but Winnipeg is right there with Vancouver. So for me, you know, Winnipeg is probably the second or third best Canadian team. And, you know, the reality is, like, how many other teams are in this conversation? Like, are you going to put Montreal and Edmonton in this conversation?
To me, Montreal is my number one Canadian team.
Really?
You know, their offense does leave me with some questions. Do they have enough firepower? Do they have enough goal scoring?
Well, by getting Tyler Toffoli and Josh Anderson,
I like those moves.
That doesn't hurt you.
It doesn't. You have the goaltending with Carey Price. You have a very solid defense that you've only added to with Joel Edmondson. And then, you know, taking contracts and dollars out of the equation, because this is just, you know, we're looking at this strictly from a talent perspective. The Montreal Canadiens, to me, you know, are probably, you know, the best Canadian team in my books because they have the fewest number of questions. Toronto still has a lot of, they're going to be able to score. There's no question about that. But are they going to be better on the back end? Are they going to be better? Is Freddie Anderson going to be better than he was last year? Is their defense going to be better?
Right.
Vancouver, goaltending. I mean, you know, does Braden Holtby bounce back? Is Thatcher Demko as good as he was in that short window that we saw? In Edmonton, I mean, you can't tell me that Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen are good enough goaltending tandem. We've seen that they aren't. To run back with the same duo is an absolute failure. The Jets, questions, defense, obviously still some unknowns there. I would have Montreal at the top, and then, you know, the teams 2 through 6 are so jumbled that you could probably have them any which way, and there's not a lot of disparity between any of those six. And then at the bottom, of course, the Ottawa Senators, Dave, who are still in the midst of their rebuild.
Yeah, I think if you're starting from the bottom to the top, it's an easy one, right? The Senators are always going to be your seventh place team.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, like I said, look, I like the move Calgary made solidifying their goaltending with Markstrom. And we had Kevin Woodley on a couple weeks ago, and he was raving about numbers that folks don't have access to that really show how valuable Markstrom was to his team. So I think, you know, for a Calgary team, now they obviously had some losses on defense, but, you know, can Calgary, with that sort of solid goaltending, really take that step forward that they've kind of been looking to do? And so there's a team that's, I mean, I think what it comes down to, and you know, look, I mean, we could all brag about, you know, the fact that some of us predicted last September that it'd be a Tampa Bay Lightning, Dallas Stars, Stanley Cup final. I mean,
the monkey hits the right key on the typewriter every now and then.
But the point—that's my whole point. I mean, it actually basically may as well have been right. And so the reality is that,
you're the guy who takes the long shot early in a hockey pool,
oh, yeah,
and then hits it once every decade and celebrates it.
Well, like I did with Jonathan Chichu in 2005.
I would
56 goals.
I would also suggest though that taking Tampa Bay Lightning is in no shape or form a long shot.
The point here is though, guys, I don't think there is a clear cut number one.
Like, no, I don't think.
For me, of the seven Canadian teams, I have Montreal number four. And I kind of struggled with maybe having them, you know, maybe number three or number two. I've got, you know, the Jets right now at number two, but easily I could have, you know, the Jets three or four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, those are the teams right there, Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, Winnipeg, that are the top four. and you could really put them in any order. Like, clearly Ottawa is last, and I have actually Calgary second last. And, you know, Dave mentioned, you know, guys like TJ Brody, you're going to lose Travis Hamonic. Yeah. I just, you know, Jacob Markstrom is an upgrade in goal, but, you know, I just look at that team and, you know, the defense needs a lot of work there. Like, Chris Tanev is a nice player, but, you know, all due respect to Chris Tanev, he's not TJ Brody. Right. And so Mark Giordano's not getting younger. You know, he's still good, but you know, that defense to me is probably, you know, might be the second weakest in the entire division with the exception of Ottawa. That's why I have them there. But yeah, the Habs moves, like, Claude Julien now has four lines that he can roll out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, up the middle, Philip Deneau, Nick Suzuki, yes, Barry Kotkaniemi. You know, you bring in a guy like Joel Edmondson. I realize he's a third pairing guy. You know, but you've already got Shea Weber, Ben Chiarot, you know, you've got
Jeff Petrie,
Brett Kulak, Victor Mete. Like, they've got a good group of defensemen. Maybe a guy like Alex Romanov plays a little bit, but he's still only 21 years old. So
it's the depth that Montreal has that, to me, right, it puts them to the top of my list.
Yeah.
You know, when you have, you know, a fourth line, I mean, you know, the fourth line has even got a lot of talent on it. If it's a guy like, you know, if Joel Armia plays in a fourth line role there, I mean, he might be on their third line. A guy like Paul Byron, as a texter texted in and said, you know, talking about Byron and Armia, having that kind of talent so deep in your lineup makes them a real matchup problem for a lot of teams in the NHL.
No, absolutely. Montreal, you know, of all the Canadian teams, might have improved the most.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Toronto's moves, I think, were sneaky good. Like, if you can have guys like Wayne Simmonds and Joe Thornton on your fourth line, and TJ Brody, I know, you know, if you listen to the show, you know how much I love him. But, you know, TJ Brody is exactly what the Leafs need, and I think the defense on the Leafs is better than some people think, and just based on the high-end talent with Austin Matthews, John Tavares, Marner, Nylander. I mean, we know the guys. I mean, sure, they're going to lose some good players, like, you know, they lost Connor Brown, for example, who's a good, you know, depth piece. But I still think up front, on forward, you know, the Leafs are the most talented team. But absolutely, the Habs, Canucks, Jets, they're all in that conversation, and it's possible, you know, by the time next season is over, you know, the difference between, you know, the best Canadian team and, you know, the fourth or fifth best Canadian team might only be like 5 or 6 points, right?
Yeah. So who knows when next season's even going to begin. That's still one of the great unknowns as we sit here on the 24th of October. When we come back, Travis Yost from TSN.ca is going to join us for more Jets discussion, more look around the NHL, all sorts of conversation as the NHL is into a bit of its slowdown period in this weird 2020 calendar year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.